Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another instalment of Perspectives by Air Insight. I am Fiona Mackay, and Addison and Ernie have finally let me back in after a two-month hiatus. And today we are focusing on leading our way out of the crisis, and specifically about empowering the workforce of tomorrow as an accelerant to growth. Joining me today, we have a returning presenter, Justice Breeze, Vice President of Commercial Programs for Umbra Group. We have Emily Whitman, President and CEO of Aerospace Futures Alliance. And Tristan Hale, Space Business Development Manager for First Mode. So as an executive coach, I'm going to be bringing the theory along with some of the concerns, opportunities, and roadblocks that my clients in aerospace are experiencing right now. Emily is going to bring the data and workforce perspective, as AFA have been proactively supporting both employers and employees during the crisis. And then Justice and Tristan, they will be sharing their perspectives from the front line. So how applicable is the theory and the data in practice? I'll let each of them share a little bit more about themselves when it's their turn to present. But for now, just a couple of logistics. Number one, we are recording. Number two, there will be time for Q&A at the end. But if you have any questions, please submit them during the presentation in the chat bar and we'll make sure we get to everybody. And a copy of the presentation will be available on the subscription pages of Air Insight. So let's dive in. So these are two things that I consider to be fact right now. Number one, the ideals that made people powerful in the past are likely irrelevant in the present. Number two, the crisis will course correct leadership in aerospace. I think these two facts are undeniable because we've seen in recent months that the virus doesn't respect hierarchy. And the leaders that are actually making the biggest impact right now aren't necessarily those at the top of the tree. We've seen that it's true for politics, and it will be true for business too, if it's not already. And I think in the coming months, as we start to transition through the crisis, it's going to become much more evident how this is playing out in aerospace. We're going to have to throw our old leadership playbooks out of the window. The need to adapt and innovate quickly while inspiring what's left of the workforce for some companies is crucial. Put simply, those with a meaningful sense of urgency and authenticity will thrive. We're not going to survive a crisis of this magnitude with a stagnant culture and workforce. So with this being Perspectives by Air Insight, I'm not going to spend too long on the theory. I think Justice and Tristan are going to provide some really fascinating perspectives in a few minutes. But what do I think is going to be different as we come out of COVID? Well, number one, there's a lot written out there right now about what is possible and what is needed post-COVID. But if we go and we read the different articles that are out there and you narrow it down, and then we consider the challenges that aerospace has faced, there's three things that I consider to be key right now that we need to think about, and that is resilience, courage, and desire for digital. So resilience, why is it replacing efficiency? So in recent years, you'll have heard efficiency every day, if not every hour. With the boom in production rates, barely a day went by where we didn't talk about it. But the issue with efficiency is that it requires standardization. And that's really, really difficult in an unpredictable environment. So now today, it's about resilience. It's about the ability to adapt to adversity and stressful events. And I don't just mean for people, I mean products, services, and supply chains too. We need strategic resilience. And by that, we mean continually anticipating what is going to happen in the industry and being able to adjust in real time. We can no longer afford to wait until things get desperate before we change. Number two, courage is crucial. Now, as we said, having to abandon what we've done before, it's scary to do that. You know, we've got tried and trusted methods, and now we need to say this doesn't work anymore, And we made some changes during the crisis. And some of those changes are here to stay. And making decisions of those magnitudes is not easy, especially when you've got shareholders. At the same time, employees are feeling a lot of fear. And those leaders that can show genuine compassion for their employees are those that will be able to motivate and inspire their workforce to keep going, stem the bleed of talented people. Vulnerability, compassion, empathy, they're not things we often thought about in aerospace before. But now it's time that we really think about how that's going to make a difference to the workforce of today and the workforce of the future. And the final thing I want to mention with courage is failure tolerance. And by that, I don't mean tolerating poor delivery or poor quality performance, some of the things that we could actually afford to do during the boom years. I'm talking about learning from our peers in the tech industry and enabling people to fail fast. Why is that important? Because we have to create space to tolerate immediate failure so that we can get innovative solutions to some really complex problems. Unfortunately, I'm hearing that the pandemic is bringing out some really bad stuff in some managers. And if you have a fearful workforce, this is going to shut down innovation and send them elsewhere. So now's the time to start thinking about what we can and can't accept, because the short-term pain will reap the benefits in the long run. Now, finally, digital dominates. We're doing more with less. Out of necessity, we were forced overnight to take on new technologies, and that is going to continue. It's not just about virtual meetings anymore. Our workforce is going to take years to recover, and we're going to need technology to bridge some of the gap. As we come out of the crisis, we need real-time visibility. We need proactive alert systems. We need flawless execution. We need a new way to engage with customers and employees. Those organizations that can optimize the digital assets will find themselves at the head of the curve. So what does this have to do with the workforce of tomorrow? Well, I'm here to assert that the workforce of tomorrow, what I mean by that is recent graduates, dare I say it, millennials, and those individuals, whatever age, that have been out there investing in learning and upskilling themselves during this turbulent times, they're going to be key to the recovery. And it's not just for the digital skills. It's much, much bigger than that. We've got to stem the bleed. We've got to make a difference. And to share more on this, I'm going to hand over to Emily Whitman, and she's going to share her learnings from AFA's virtual job fair. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you, Fiona, and thank you, Air Insight, for this opportunity to speak about leading our way out of the crisis. As Fiona mentioned earlier, I am Emily Whitman, the president and CEO of the Aerospace Futures Alliance, and we are Washington State's trade association advocating on behalf of aerospace companies and communities and helping our member companies connect and grow. And today's topic gives me a chance to talk about personally the single most rewarding week of my time at AFA, and that was our virtual aerospace job fair in June. And I will say this event raised quite a few eyebrows when it was first announced back in May, and I did receive quite a bit of pushback of transitioning to not only a digital platform that for folks was relatively untested in-house, but also having a job fair or a hiring event in the midst of a global pandemic and the resulting economic downturn. At the time that we were holding this fair, unemployment in Washington State was near 15%. And this event was really seen as unexpected, especially due to the impact of the economic downturn on our industry with the 737 MAX and COVID hitting us, you know, earlier than any other industry. And our job fair in person in 2019 was wildly successful. 1,500 people attended in person, and from that, 75% of participants were rated by recruiters as qualified for those open positions. We obviously could not hold a similar event this year. There were long lines of folks with resumes in hand down at the Kent Showwear Center last year in 2019, and obviously not socially distant, and it's hard to have a conversation through a mask these days. So how do you make a pitch to someone to hire you? And it was just kind of old school and really inefficient, because you didn't know that by the time you got up to the front of that line after driving, you know, down to Kent for a couple of hours, that you would actually have the qualifications or the interest in the position that was open with the recruiter who was sitting at that table. So we certainly heard that workforce this year was still important. And so we did want to do another type of job fair, and we had planned to do one in person. So we had to pivot really quickly to figure out how we could do a virtual job fair, because even in the midst of this economic downturn, finding qualified talent remains a top concern, a long-term concern for our AFA members. They had trouble finding qualified talent or competing for that talent before COVID, and they're really concerned about losing perspective and losing out on hard-won talent built up in this state during COVID, and not being able to find those folks when business picks back up later this year, hopefully, or in the future. So we were concerned about the bleed of our hard-won talent out of the aerospace industry and into other industries that have not been as impacted by what's happening, namely Amazon, and that is both in the warehouse and distribution for business, as well as in-house in their business and software development teams. And that's for experienced mid-career professionals. And in particular, I was worried about new graduates who were going through a two-year or four-year or even apprenticeship program and were graduating with in-demand skills into an economy that you know, socially or anecdotally, especially in the press, seemed not to have a job or an opportunity for them. And so it's really important to stem the bleed of any type of aerospace talent that we've invested, you know, billions in building in this state. And we specifically asked this year's participants if they had been separated from employment due to the economic situation, and in my mind made them somewhat more likely to take any open position and not necessarily, you know, wait to find another career position in aerospace. And 37% of those participants said yes, that they were recently separated from employment due to COVID-19 or the economic situation. And the remaining 43% were either recent graduates from our local institutions or were employed but were seeking a new opportunity. And as I said, these are really highly qualified folks. We asked them what sorts of skills that they had, and they had just more than three, honestly, credentials or in-demand skills sought by our employers. And so it was really important for us to pivot within a matter of weeks to a virtual platform and pick a platform very quickly. And luckily, we partnered with the Washington State Employment Security Department, who has a contract with a company called Brazen. And all they do is online hiring or event management and platforms. And it was a really slick platform and enabled our participants to have a 5-minute chat with a smart queue, which had our company set specific criteria ahead of time to say, I need somebody with this specific credential who's got MCAT experience, and you know, I'm not looking for any engineers, or vice versa, we're looking for engineers, not production workers. And so this year it was incredibly successful. We connected 1,400 registrants and 700 individual job seekers during our event with more than 30 employers in aerospace in Washington State. Those are local companies looking for local talent in Washington State. Again, we didn't really want to export talent outside of our state. And those companies represented had nearly 1,000 open positions. So again, there is continued demand and current demand for talent in our state. So they either had current open positions or they anticipated making some hiring decisions and opening up new opportunities in as soon as Q3 of 2020. Our job fair companies ended up having over 2,000 conversations over the course of just 5 hours. And that is far more efficient than having folks stand in line and wait to see if you had, you know, the right qualifications for the open position. And our recruiters were averaging 48 conversations. All the recruiters were having 48 conversations every minute. So really, really efficient use of the platform and of everyone's time. And that also gave us incredible data metrics to analyze and think about how we can make this even more impactful for our employers and our job seekers. Every recruiter gave a rating to the person that they spoke with, and they found that 89% of workers were highly qualified for the open positions, and 11% of all of those 764 participants were scheduled for interviews within their 5-minute conversation. So they were moved on to the highest level of steps. Excuse me, I said 11%, I meant 16%. But 89% of folks overall were really highly qualified for open positions. And Fiona mentioned failing fast and needing to have courage. And it was really important for AFA and for myself to set a reasonable expectation of what success looked like when experimenting with this new platform. you know, we're all trying out digital platforms and trying to use our limited resources very efficiently and strategically. And we really took a risk in having a virtual platform. We didn't know if anybody would have open positions or if our employers would be actually interested in meeting with any of the, you know, hundreds of folks who were looking for work in their skill set. And we were very happy that they were, and overwhelmingly so, people were excited to participate in this event. But for me, success was set at a very reasonable goal. Success for me was just one person being retained or hired in the aerospace industry in Washington State as a result of this event. And we did hit that goal. Machinist Inc., one of AFA's board members, has successfully hired an individual out of our job fair, and we know of many more folks who are landing in positions within Washington aerospace companies as a result of this event. And you'll hear in a minute from our good friends over at First Mode who participated in our virtual job fair. And, you know, Tristan will share his experience of working with this platform, but also what he was specifically looking for and the type of talent and how they handled this pivot to an online platform. But what we really learned is, you know, passion and interest and dedication and excitement about our aerospace industry in Washington remains really, really high. I think people, they want to stay in this industry. It's one of the most exciting, innovative industries that we have. And we wanted to retain those folks, and they wanted to be retained in the industry. And you can't shake hands with folks, but you can still meet and you can still have, you know, valuable conversations where you do have an opportunity to convey that passion and that excitement in an online conversation, and that you really can embody the virtual tools, and you'll meet more great candidates at a far more efficient level. Across the board, our recruiters said that they just had great conversations with folks. It was a slick platform, and they really appreciated the data afterwards, as opposed to just having sort of a binder of paper resumes to go through afterwards. They had lots of data and information on those candidates based on their conversations, and that made moving those candidates into open positions far more efficient and actionable for them. So all in all, it was a very successful event, and I'm looking forward to talking to everyone about it and then just other workforce needs or pivot needs in the state. Thanks, Fiona.
Thanks, Emily. And just learning about that, you know, even for people that aren't recruiting, I mean, this Brazen software sounds like it could be amazing for B2B. And just so everybody knows, I am not being sponsored by Brazen. Never heard of it before today.
But, more is going to say, but yes, something that we continually hear is how do you pivot to a B2B platform, especially if you're trying to get into defense or space or other industries. And so, you know, any good platform, you know, let us know, because I think we're all experimenting right now.
Yeah. So it sounds like this could be, next step could be perhaps AFA using some of this to create some B2B.
Absolutely. You read our minds.
Well, thank you, Emily. So now we're going to hand over to the front line. And today I invited two very different speakers. Justice, I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about himself, but, you know, Justice is from what I would consider a more traditional aerospace company that has been, you know, buffeted just like the rest of us during the crisis. Whereas Tristan's company's had quite a different story. And so I thought it would be really interesting for our audience to hear the different experiences and what we can actually learn from one another. So let's start with Tristan. Could you say a few words, Tristan, about yourself, about your company, about what First Mode has experienced during the last 5 months?
Certainly, Fiona. And thank you, everyone at Air Insight, for the opportunity. And thank you, Emily, for offering that career fair earlier. It was a very interesting experience and effective. We do have some candidates in the pipeline right now from that. It was great. Personally, my background is in electrical engineering and business, and I have some experience leading technical and business development teams across the semiconductor, space, and mining industries. And I've continued that at First Mode, which is an engineering organization that supports clients across the space, mining, and clean tech industries. Our origins are in space exploration. We're founded by a bunch of ex-NASA JPL engineers. And we use systems engineering wherever there are complex technical problems, reliability or safety concerns, or just high stakes. What has made this conversation like acutely relevant to me and First Mode and our experience is the activities that are happening for First Mode right now. The pandemic has actually coincided with a period of extreme growth for the company, both in terms of literal staff count, where we've moved from like 30 to 50 plus employees since we've started working from home, the size and volume of customer engagements, the facilities and capabilities that we have, and our international presence. And so we're managing this change and in many ways defining what our company will look like for years to come in the context of COVID's constraints.
And Justus, perhaps should have made you go first. Can you tell me about Umbra's experience over the last 5 months?
Thanks, Fiona, and thanks to everybody that has joined us today. Thanks to Air Insight. It's a pleasure to be back. As you correctly identified, Umbra is very much a traditional supplier in the aerospace industry. We do have an industrial division, but aerospace is sort of the primary driver of growth and profitability. We are an actuation company. We provide actuation components, in some cases, complete actuation systems. We are tier one to Boeing, tier one to Airbus, and we work with all the major system integrators all over the planet. We've been around for about 50 years. Our parts typically wind up in the wing or the tail of largely commercial aircraft. We have some defense revenue as well, but we're heavily weighted on the commercial side with about 80% commercial aerospace. And I guess one of the descriptors that Tristan used that we're not really able to use at Umbra right now is growth. We're certainly not seeing a lot of growth. We're looking at revenues coming in 2020 that are comparable to our revenues in 2014. So we're looking at shrinking by probably 35 to 40%.
So thanks, Justus and Tristan. So quite some quite different stories there. So what are your thoughts on some of the things that Emily and I have said so far? How does the theory and the data translate into reality?
Yeah, well, It's been a challenge kind of navigating this new situation. I think that like if I had to pick one word to define the experience, it would be tension. I think that there's a lot of things that are working against each other. You need to kind of find a balance between them. I think if we're looking at the career fair experience, like there's tension between trying to find the quantifiable skills of the person you're bringing on board, and then like the underlying values, which requires a bit of a deeper look, and managing that with your time and the way that you can engage with that client digitally is a challenge. And then internally, just like managing the tension between kind of like this isolation that happens when you're working from home. And then like this tendency for us to fill our calendars with Zoom and then feel like alone yet overwhelmed with meetings and work and all of that. And so trying to find a way to respect both sides of that tension and try and navigate between them has been kind of like the name of the game for us.
I certainly agree with that, Tristan, that there's a great deal of tension in Umbra's business right now. We are more dispersed today than we traditionally are with our headquarters in Italy, factories in Germany, factories in North America. The challenge of working from home is becoming more and more acute for us as an aerospace group. We're finding that strategic planning takes longer, execution on projects takes longer. So it's been a very challenging environment, notwithstanding a lot of the industry pressures that are impacting our business as well. We are trying to work really hard to redefine our relationships with our customers, trying to share the burden, share the pain, if you will, trying to really look at resetting those relationships so that they can not just survive, but also prosper in 3 to 5 years' time. And unfortunately, at Umbra, we don't have the occasion to hire a lot of new people, so we aren't able to participate in a lot of the job fairs that have been described today. But one of the things that we are absolutely doing is we're looking at our existing workforce, and we're trying to challenge all different kinds of people that have always been a part of our team maybe for shorter periods of time, longer periods of time, to work together in a different way. And for some of the younger people in our organization, for some people that don't have 15, 20 years of aerospace experience, we're really asking them to take their place at the head of the conference table in some cases, and not just being content to sit in the back of the room and listen and not engage. And what we're finding at Umbra is that a lot of our best ideas, a lot of our innovation are coming from younger people in our workforce. They're coming from people that may not have 10, 15 years of aerospace experience, maybe just one or two. And maybe they're able to draw on other experiences from other industries, whether that might be Amazon, whether that might be retail. We're finding that we're getting outsized contributions and outsized innovation from these younger members of our workforce and our teams. And I have to say, that's really exhilarating and it's really encouraging.
And what are your thoughts on some of the leadership comments that I made earlier? What are you seeing in terms of resilience, courage, and digital? Would you agree with me, or would you disagree with me that these are going to be key traits coming out of COVID? And you may disagree.
I think that number two is the most resonant for me. I think courage, and especially that second one, is courage to express compassion. I think for any group experiencing growth or being beset by challenges, you need to come together to address those changes, and that requires like trust in your colleagues. And that's so hard to establish digitally and with this interface that we have right here. And so finding ways to like establish that empathy and enable that trust is like a big challenge and something that we like actively work at like every day. And so, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with these.
I certainly agree, Fiona. I think I really appreciated your discussion about a failure-tolerant culture. We need to be able to embrace some innovation, embrace some new ideas, and we need to try some new things that we may not have tried before. It's quite clear to me that what made our aerospace companies successful during this 15-year super cycle, these ideas, these practices, they may not be the ones that propel our growth into the future. So we need courage to try some different things. And we need a bit of a tolerance for failure. Let's try something. Let's see if it doesn't work. If it doesn't work, then the worst that we can say is that we've learned a great deal and our process has improved. So I think our cultures need to be able to experiment and to embrace a bit of failure if we're going to really empower that innovation that is going to lead us into a different direction. And I think courage also may be applied to some of the conversations that we're having with our customers these days in aerospace. You know, we need to have the courage to speak with our customers about some unsustainable practices that may have been sort of existing in our cultures before, in our operations before. But when you're stripping away so much capacity and so much growth, those practices become immediately unsustainable. And we have to have some conversations with our customers about the fact that, you know, we just can't do business this way anymore.
So uncomfortable conversations is what I'm hearing. And I also love what you're saying about the failure tolerance. I'm in that weird place where I'm right on the cusp of being a millennial. And I was reading about some of the differences, and particularly how I could engage better with Gen X. Wish I'd read this a few years ago. And one of the things that I read about was that a lot of millennials will bring ideas that are not fully formed. And that isn't because they don't want to satisfy. It's because they want the collaboration to refine it, to come up with the end result. They don't want to bring the solution. They want to bring their ideas forward and refine them. And so it's likely that some of these ideas that the millennials bring to you might not work at first, but they're bringing them to you because hopefully, you know, they respect the Gen X and the Boomer experience. And I've seen some really powerful experiences, some really powerful examples of that. When I was in Rolls-Royce and I was in the sales teams, they proactively created teams where you had really experienced sales team members and really young sales team members. And together it was pretty dynamic. So I'd really love to see that across more of the supply chain. So I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball out here. And this question is one that I haven't prepared Tristan and Justice with, but it just came to me. So I'd like to hear from Tristan. What are some tips you would give to millennials for working with other generations? And then I would like to hear from Justice about some tips that he would have for boomers and Gen X to work with millennials. Camera's recording.
Yeah, sure. So actually, it's kind of funny that you surprised us with this question, because the way that you've just been speaking about how you present your ideas, especially to leadership who are often of a different generation, resonates like with a really big piece of advice that I've held true and have tried to live at first mode. And that is actually the way that you present your concepts and your ideas can actually impact like how they're received and the type of feedback that you get. And I think that there's this pressure that we put on ourselves when you're in a new large organization that has all these formalities in history, that you think you need to present a finished product to leadership in order for them to have like think the best of you. And you know, there are some cases where you really need that, but often if you give someone something that looks like it's a work in progress, they feel willing to engage with you. If you present something that is too much polish, then people might not be willing to give you an honest critique. So don't be afraid to honestly engage with your boss and give him, you know, 75% of an idea that you've thought through. Don't feel like you need to put 100% of polish on it.
What would your advice be if the boss turned around and said, "Hey, I was expecting a finished product"?
Then I think that you need to ensure that you are setting clear expectations with your boss and refine that line of communication. If you let them know that it's a work in progress and then you show them the work in progress, then that should have a good constructive dialogue.
Thanks, Tristan. Thanks for going first. Over to you, Justice.
So the question to me is how boomers should learn to interact with younger generations then. And I'll do my best not to be offended by that. I think what we have learned at Umbra is that, as you mentioned, Fiona, the ideas that come to us from different generations, younger people, they're not always completely formed. And I think Tristan seconded that as well. What I would say to those younger members of any workforce, especially at Umbra, is that you need to be patient with people like me that may not fully understand the strength and the power of your incomplete idea. And you need to give us some time. You may need to give us a little bit of additional explanation as to the particulars of how this idea might work and what the risks may be, because we probably don't understand it as well as you do. So a bit of patience is important. I think the other thing to be mindful of, if you're a younger person with a fantastic idea, and I believe Tristan was beginning to speak a bit about this, is be ready to be challenged, right? The fact that you're being challenged doesn't mean that that's a bad idea. It usually means the opposite. It means that it's a good idea, but we need to quickly pressure test it and understand what it can or can't do. So if you're a younger person that comes up with an idea and someone says, "How would this work with customer ABC?" This is a compliment to you, and it's nothing to be afraid of, and it's something that you should really embrace.
Yeah, Justice, that really resonates. You need to be able to back it up. And it's also okay to say, that's something that I need to figure out. So being able to be pressure tested, for sure.
Yeah. And one of the things that that really stood out for me when I was doing my research is, you know, don't take the skepticism personally. A lot of Gen X and boomers grew up in a time when they were told to question everything. So when they come in and they're throwing out the pros and cons for your idea, it can be easy to get, you know, defensive or think you've done something wrong, but actually it's just them trying to make you better. And you know, I always say that, you know, I prefer real over nice. You know, when you're getting pros and cons, you're getting real feedback, and that's going to develop you more than just nice feedback. And the other thing that's really stood out to me is, you know, don't expect a lot of praise. I don't believe it to be true of all millennials, but, you know, there's the joke that millennials are their trophy generation and they've got a lot of praise. And, you know, that wasn't as common in some of the generations before us. And, you know, when you get a compliment, you've done a really, really good job. So, you know, really hold on to that. And I mean, for me personally, when I get new bosses, I always sit down with them and say, hey, you know, my love language is words of affirmation. So, you know, if you tell me I'm doing a good job, that's going to keep me going for a few weeks. So, you know, sometimes that vulnerability can come in quite handy. All right. So going back to Justice and Tristan, I want to hear a little bit more about on what your organizations are doing to engage with your employees when you're not able to meet with them face to face. How are you keeping that motivation high?
So yeah. I can just say, I think we certainly are spending a lot of time on these new tools, Microsoft Teams. You know, that's become a very powerful part of doing business day to day. And I think we early on, we became very aware of the fact that we need to use these tools to just connect with each other, you know, to have, if you will, a Friday afternoon cocktail virtual session, rather than just, you know, hour after hour of planning and execution and focus on projects. Let's have a cocktail at 5:30 on Microsoft Teams. And let's find out what we're all doing for the weekend. You know, this is part of that connective tissue of an organization or a culture that's been taken away from us. And we really have to work proactively to insert that into our weekly practices.
Yeah, that echoes a lot of what we're doing on our end. We're trying to communicate and connect with each other however we can. And we're trying to do some weird and wacky stuff just to get us engaged and like try and feel through the screen if we can, through happy hours, or through, we did like a virtual tour of a Walvi ranch. We have had some like outside speakers come in and talk to our group during like the lunch hour. We had a professional wrestler come and talk to our group at noon a couple of weeks ago. We're gonna have like a viewing party for the Mars Perseverance launch. And so, yeah, just trying to find a bunch of different things in order to connect and not necessarily always talk about work.
And Tristan, I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking that, you know, some of those that have been in the industry for a while will say, yeah, we can get behind the Mars activity, but I'm going to roll my eyes when it comes to, you know, wallabies and wrestlers. What would you say in response to that?
Yeah, well, first of all, wallabies are adorable, so I'd recommend you go check that out. But I'm not saying that wallabies and wrestlers are the answer here. But this is just kind of like, we need to try a lot of different things because it's hard to communicate even face to face. And it's even more so when you're remote. And these are really just opportunities for like our group to like articulate themselves and talk about things that they find interesting and like share that with each other. No one of those things is going to like enable like courage and like true connection, which is required as we know in these times. So you're going to have to try a lot of different things.
Yeah. And I think that what we were concerned about with losing talent to other industries is that when we're recruiting similar skill sets or similar age groups, you have to figure out, you know, what their recruitment experience and work life experience is. But there are other options. And if you're not making it an environment where you give people a mental break space. So what I hear with the wallaby and the wrestler is, hey, let's get together and have a conversation that isn't about this project timeline or about COVID and how it's impacting your family. Because my God, if I hear another conversation about like, how are you doing? Great. Oh, I'm not actually doing great. You know, it's, I think we're all burnt out, but hey, that wallaby was super cute, or man, it was so nice to learn a little leadership or resilience lesson from that random speaker, you know, wrestler. Those are the similar types of experiences that they otherwise wouldn't be able to share with their friends who work in tech and who do put on very intentional, very sort of shiny, engaging, creative, interesting, innovative, you know, events for their employees to make it a really dynamic place to work. And so if you have an option between working at the, you know, job where sort of just day in, day out, plug in, and then an option where it's really interesting and fun and you're doing these things and it's the same paycheck, you're probably going to go with the more dynamic, you know, engaging place that's really invested in their employees' mental health space as well. So I know that we had a more traditional like AFA virtual happy hour, and the feedback I got was, man, it was so nice that one, it didn't feel like anyone was trying to sell me anything. Sure, I made connections, but it wasn't intentionally this sort of forced B2B networking session, and that we just got to hang out and check in with people and hear how they're doing and spark some creative conversation and about, you know, the Mars Perseverance coming up and give people that space to talk about their passions again and be excited. So I think both are possible, but Tristan, I really liked your feedback earlier about tension and when it comes, you know, tension between trying to be productive and trying to create this positive environment. And I think you're going to really see standout companies rise to the top when all this is over based on the type of activities that First Mode is prioritizing.
And the challenge is real. I've been on LinkedIn this week and I have actually seen three people go from Boeing to Amazon. Now, these tech companies are approaching mid-career professionals. I mean, I was approached by Amazon when I was with Parker, and they're approaching mid-career professionals a lot more than you perhaps realize, and they're using the power of LinkedIn to do that. And I think one of the things we're going to see through the crisis is we're going to see a lot of retirements. And so when the industry does bounce back, we're going to be relying on a lot of the younger generation to help fill some of these spots. And we got to stem the bleed. So however much, you know, people have been resisting adopting some of this stuff, you know, give it a go, because quite frankly, you can't afford not to anymore.
Yeah. And Fiona, I think that's resonant. When we're talking to candidates that are like engaging with Amazon or Google, like the Amazon and Google already have the reputation. They know that these are fun, groups that provide all these amenities. It's hard to articulate what your culture is, especially when like you're a smaller or lesser known organization. Being able to speak to and point to like real anecdotes that are expressions of that culture are essential when you're trying to convey that to new recruits or other people who are trying to get to know your organization.
I certainly agree with everything that's been said, and we are feeling the impact of a lot of these trends at Umbra. I can remember a conversation I had with one of our employees a few weeks ago where she said, you know, maybe I should just go back into tech. That's where I came from. And, you know, we had to have a pretty serious talk about her future and the fact that she could very easily gain a tremendous amount of experience and responsibility doing things for Umbra that she may not be able to do at a much larger company. You know, sort of that 5 years of experience in 18 to 24 months and how valuable that might be, whatever she decides to do with her future. So I think you need to be cognizant of the threat, cognizant of the risk, and you need to really have some of these high gain conversations with your key team members.
Thanks, Justice. And thanks, Tristan and Emily, for contributing to that conversation. I want to hand over to our audience now, give them a chance to ask us all some questions. And our first question today comes from Richard Sherman. And his question is to Justice. And his question was, do you mean the crisis in the moment for the new kid? Do you mean the crisis is the moment for the new kids on the block to become disruptors of the aviation industry? In a Flight Global webinar last week, that is what Steve Harsey said from ALC. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree?
I think that the aerospace industry in general is not always welcoming of disruption. It's a pretty conservative industry. So I think when you look at deciding to put on your cape and your goggles and be a disruptor, I think you need to be aware of the fact that you're going to get a lot of pressure to work inside the system. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't challenge that system, and that you shouldn't push against a lot of these assumptions that we've been dealing with for decades. But I very much resonate with a comment that this is the time. You know, this is really the time. I think how we treat each other inside the four walls of our organization, how we treat our customers in this time, 6 months, 9 months, this is going to define us for the next 10 years. So it's absolutely the time. But if I had a younger person working for me that wanted to put on that cape and be a hardcore disruptor, I would encourage them to do their best to respect the system, because aerospace, let's face it, it's a pretty conservative place.
And our next question is an exciting one from Ernie.
Hey, Fiona.
Sorry?
Can I jump on what Justice was just saying?
Oh, absolutely. I'm just rather excited about Ernie's question, but yeah, go for it.
Yeah, Ernie is a great question, and I'm sure I'll also have lots to say on it. But for me, for what we're hearing from our AFA members in particular, and in the ecosystem, is that people are hanging on by a thread, and they're really just trying to outlast their main competitor, not become, you know, the best and brightest new disruptor, which I think, you know, a lot of our newer companies, whether it's First Mode or even how Blue Origin has impacted contracting with, you know, more traditional aerospace suppliers. I think when you look at tension, you look at how your contract is going with a, you know, 50-year business, and you look at how your contract is going with a 5-year business, and your 5-year business is probably more updated and streamlined and interesting, and it's maybe making you rethink how you do your process in general. But these disruptive ideas are, a lot of our companies absolutely have to quickly pivot and implement something untested and some new system, or else they just won't last. And I think a lot of that right now is in business development and finding new contracts. Can't tell you the number of people who are saying, we're really trying to get into defense, or we're really trying to get into space. And it's like, that's great. But when you can't do these more traditional, you know, B2B networking, handshake, old school agreements, you know, as a millennial, that stuff drives me crazy. It just seems so happenstance. It's like, you don't order food like that. You don't order, you know, not order, but you don't find the love of your life like that anymore. Like, why is it still the old standard for finding, you know, a new business relationship or new contract? I literally say, like, why isn't there an app for that? And so I think whoever comes up with the best, you know, B2B, almost automated, you know, connection platform, that's hyper local is going to be, you know, sitting on some pretty good technology. But all that to say is those folks who are able to be creative and sort of break their traditional mold and outlast their competitors are, you know, should be doing that work right now.
Thanks, Emily. I love your openness and directness about this topic. All right, so game on, Ernie. All right, so as one firmly taught by the greatest generation, I early on had to develop a thicker skin and learn what it really took without a lot of compliments. While many of us who are now in senior leadership positions and remember our experiences, we find engaging with millennials strange because we are easily offended and their egos can easily be bruised. What is the best way to keep millennials from sticking their heads back in the turtle shell and get them to understand that excellence and high productivity are expected and are not an exceptional behavior? So I'm gonna go first with this one. So one of the things that I think really might put this into perspective for some people is that for millennials, the idea of job security, it's just not there. You know, most of us have grown up through multiple recessions. Most of us have seen that it's not a job for life anymore. Most of us have seen that we are actually quite disposable. And so I would say that for a lot of millennials, our identity is not as attached to the workplace as it has been for previous generations, because we just cannot rely on that the same way. We're now in a position where we're having multiple careers, not just working for multiple companies, because we've seen our parents get ditched. We've seen us struggle to get into the market. So we don't have the same level of trust with industry as perhaps some of our predecessors. And In terms of like me personally, I'm a millennial that really thrives on praise, not gonna lie. And it's not necessarily because I need to know that I'm doing a good job. It's because I need to know that you care about me, that you care about me as a person. I'm gonna go the extra mile for people that care about me. And so I don't necessarily need praise every day, but I need to know that you actually care about me as a human being. And so what I would say is, you know, if you're not comfortable with, you know, frequent compliments, at least spend some time getting to know someone, you know, take them out to lunch, have a conversation, you know, just let them know you care about them as a human being. And those small investments will pay dividends in the long run. I have no problem picking up the phone. I mean, Addison's been a great example of that. You know, when I was going through a hard time a couple of months ago, he was picking up the phone to me, you know, I care about you, I want to help you. And that really, really meant a lot to me. And so that's what I would encourage. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, again, this is, you know, to quote Tristan, this is an area of tension. And it doesn't have to be us versus them anymore. And the only way we're going to get past that is if we talk about it, you know. And I can't stress enough that it is just as much the responsibility of the millennials as it is for the boomers and the Gen Xs. So let's have a conversation. Let's have an open conversation. When you do this, it drives me mad because, okay, could you explain to me why you do that? Or, hey, here's a little bit about my history. Here's my time when I sat there and, you know, we thought the lights were going to go out in Seattle. And, you know, we had the crisis back in the 70s or 80s. I don't really know when it is, but I had somebody who was 80 and running a successful business, you know, tell me about that. And it really made me see the world from a different perspective, why there was that risk aversion, why people didn't always want to adopt my wacky ideas. Anyway, I could talk and talk about this for hours, and I want to give my colleagues a chance to say something. So how would you respond to Ernie's request or request for information? Emily, you said that you have something to say.
I take issue. I think that especially as a young millennial woman, and especially with the title and job that I have, that I will have had for about a year, a lot of people fundamentally did not understand why my board hired me for this job. And I've had to demonstrate through, you know, excellence and high productivity and exceptional results that I was the right fit and that the board knew that when they hired me. And I think there's this, again, tension between, as a millennial, I think a lot of us have had to prove ourselves. And there are some who are more comfortable with being more vocal and energetic about that. And then there are some that do that more quietly and have a great idea. But until you pull them up, as Justice said, to the front of the conference table, they're not going to march into your office with the plan and engage you on it. So I think, you know, trust in who your hires were, but my pushback really is, are you demonstrating an environment or specific excellence and high productivity at the highest levels of your organization that sets the tone for everyone else, regardless of what generation they're at? You know, if there are people who feel that they're entitled to get some sort of accolade, you know, are they just learning from their environment? Because somebody who's been at the company for 20 years gets, you know, a nice big slap on the back for doing maybe 20% of visible effort, right? And I got to tell you, when all of this transformation to digital connection happened, as a millennial, I have always had to show up as prepared as possible, ready for the conversation if and when I'm called upon. And to watch a lot of the older generation take 10 minutes at the beginning of every meeting to figure out their technology was honestly very offensive, because we as millennials, again, like, are expected to be put together and to have it together, really countering this like low expectation, you know, reputation of our generation. And so to watch, you know, an older generation get a pass for not being able to figure something out, it's like, why are you wasting my time? Especially, you know, at the level that I'm at, with watching you try to figure out how your mic works, you know, or not really being prepared to have a value add conversation, just really not being prepared for meetings. So my pushback is like, is the environment that you're setting showing exactly how you, you reward and recognize excellence and high productivity within your team, because that will set the tone. And I think a lot of us in the younger generation look around at people who've been here for a long time and go like, I'm already operating at a higher level and yet I'm getting paid this. And I understand I'm earlier in my career, but don't give them 50% more praise for, you know, 20% less work than what I'm putting forward. That's my soapbox.
Thanks, Emily. And if I was to summarize that, in Rolls-Royce, we had a phrase for it and it was think about the shadow that you cast as a leader. Okay, so I'm just want to be conscious of time. It's 9:57 and we've had a really lively discussion. Justice and Tristan, would you like to take 30 seconds each to do a laser response to Ernie's question?
Yeah, well, I think that...
Oh, go ahead, Tristan.
I think that there, you know, Emily arose some valuable points, and I think you did too, Fiona. I'm thinking about like the activities that I took before engaging on this platform and that like I know everyone else on this panel did. Was we posted it on LinkedIn and liked it and shared it. And that amount of like just explicit praise and acknowledgement of each other's activities is much more normal for our generation. And like we spend so much of our time sharing our lives and then getting and then affirming other people's lives like through these digital means. And so we bring those expectations into the workforce. And so it likely is not that we believe that it is like super exceptional behavior. It's just like our expectation is more affirmation for better or worse.
Thanks, Tristan. I guess my comments to the dialogue. At Umbra, I think we found that maybe we could replace the word praise with engagement. It isn't so much that the younger people that we're privileged to work with and that are giving us so many great contributions. Our feeling isn't that they need praise two or three times a day. It's that they want to feel that they are a part of the solution. They want to be engaged. And maybe my response to Ernie's comment is that I think this is, in aerospace right now, we can't afford anything less. We need engagement from everybody. We need engagement from the, you know, 66-year-old application engineer. We need engagement from the 24-year-old program manager. We need engagement from everybody, or we're not going to be successful. To Emily's point, that we really are in a crisis.
Thanks, Justice. Well, I'm sure this conversation could go on for a few more hours. I think it's a really important discussion. I think it's a great chance for all of us to learn. But you know, you'll see more of my articles on our insight. And I actually have a podcast with Emily that's going to be coming out in August about her experiences as a top 30 under 30. And so there'll be plenty more chance to engage. Next week, Ernie and Addison will be going over electric airplanes and what that's going to mean for the industry. We've got several CTOs and CEOs here to talk about that and how that's going to shape things as we come out of the crisis. And so if you want to come to that, make sure you sign up early. And if you do miss it, just like today's recording, it will be available on the membership site for Air Insight. So thank you for joining us, everybody. It's been a really fun and lively discussion. And those that didn't join, I think they have missed out. But hey, never mind. We can make sure that we push this recording far and wide. So thanks for joining, everybody, and we will talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.